And here we go. Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy, John Couch. John engineering and producing our program on the other side of the glass as we continue to maintain our safe presence, safe distancing, while still bringing people together here on the radio in the Green Thing Zocalo Village studio. It is Friday, the May 8th, 2020, live weekdays here on 1030 Tucson's Voice for Trusted News Talk. All of our programs available for you with worldwide live listening at buckmastershow.com. That also is the place that has all of our podcasts available for you on your schedule 24/7. Our Friday shout out to our media partners, TucsonSentinel.com. We'll hear from Dylan Smith with that organization in a few minutes. Green Valley News and Saharita Sun, the Tucson local media group, and its portfolio of publications, including Inside Tucson Business, Tucson Weekly, Oro Valley Explorer, Marana News, Foothills News, and Desert Times. Our Friday focus interview today, Chuck Ryan is with us. Mr. Ryan was hired last fall as Tucson's 28th chief of the Tucson Fire Department. Chief Ryan has worked in the fire service since 1994, having served most recently as an assistant fire chief with the Fairfax County Fire and Rescue Department in Virginia. He now is leading the 32nd busiest department in the country, the second largest department in Arizona, and the Tucson Fire Department operates 22 fire stations, has 632 uniformed and 49 non-sworn personnel on staff. Joining us on the other live line is Dylan Smith, editor and publisher of the online news service TucsonSentinel.com, celebrating its 10th anniversary this year. Dylan is vice president of the Arizona Press Club and immediate past chair of Lion Publishers. Lion is an acronym for Local Independent Online News Publishers. We'll begin by welcoming Dylan. Dylan, good to have you on the program again.
Always a pleasure. I got to correct you. According to my calendar here at my desk, it is now March 196. Third, I don't know where you're getting May 8th from.
It feels, I'll tell you, my calendar stopped after March 17th, which was St. Patrick's Day. That's about, it seems like the old movie Groundhog's Day. You know, it's the same day.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, you got it. Let's welcome Chief Ryan. Chief, how are you?
I'm doing very well, Bill. Thanks for having me on.
I had hoped to meet you face-to-face. It was not to be. Maybe next time we can meet face-to-face, but this is going to have to do, and I wanted to get you on the program. When we set this up, it was before the COVID-19 broke out. My goodness, you joined the department in fall, and then this hits. You guys and your team, your men and women, have really been on the front lines, haven't they, Chief?
Yeah, Bill, they sure have, and they're doing a tremendous job with some interesting challenges. You know, we deal with sick people every day, but certainly the COVID-19 pandemic is a new twist on our operations and with respect to our emergency medical services.
Give us kind of the overview. How is the department? How has TFD modified its operations?
So a good portion of it is almost invisible probably to the end user, to the patient that calls for 911 services. But, you know, one thing is how we look, right? Normally we would show up in our blue uniforms with our gloves on and, you know, not necessarily wearing face masks or gowns or shoe covers, booties. But with the COVID-19 virus and how it spreads and how rapidly and easily it can spread, we had to modify our work practices to protect both our people as well as the, you know, the residents of Tucson that we serve. So showing up on a call wearing different gear, not looking like the men and women would look if you stopped by the fire station and just saw them in their station uniform. That's a big one. Certainly how we are interacting with the public with respect to calls for service. So somebody would call us to their residence or their apartment or their business needing help, and we would go right up to them and deal with them where they are. And in the COVID-19 era now, and it's interesting that what is a little over 60, 75 days has become an era, but it really has. You know, if people are able, if they are well enough to walk outside into the open air where we can interact with them, not be in a closed space, that's a change for us. And we've actually also worked with our operational medical director and other physicians in the area to do some telemedicine. So, you know, through a mobile device, we can connect a patient who may not be acutely ill and in need of immediate advanced life support to a physician who can give them and us some direction on whether that person really needs to be transported to the emergency department or if they can be treated at home or by their own personal primary care physician.
And if someone has a question informationally, Chief Ryan, about COVID, probably 911 would not be the place to call, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. You know, it's a good problem to have, really, that our public is so trustful of Tucson's first responders to think of 911 as a primary response number. But that's really not always what it's for. It's for those truly emergent incidents. And we never want to discourage people from using 911. Certainly, if they're having an emergency or they feel they're having an emergency, then we want them to use it. But if they can be a little, these are difficult times, and if we can help our healthcare partners by asking the public to be a little more resilient and maybe take an extra step and think before calling 911, do I really need an ambulance? Do I really need a fire truck or a police officer? That really helps a burden on the system and allows us to be more effective and efficient in responding to true emergent needs in the city.
All right, here's Dylan Smith, a question for Chief Ryan.
Can you give us a quick example of some situations where somebody maybe shouldn't call 911 but should call somebody? Who should they call?
So if somebody, I can give you an example of that. So, you know, the COVID-19 symptoms that we've seen and have been, you know, publicly expressed about having a low-grade fever, a cough. Now, if you get to that shortness of breath phase, shortness of breath is a medical emergency, right? But if you're just feeling poorly, that general malaise and perhaps because of the heightened awareness of this illness as it's hit us right during the peak of allergy season as well. You know, really kind of thinking through the steps of, again, is this an emergency or am I just feeling bad? Do I have a bad head cold or allergies or could this be COVID? And calling 911 to determine if you have COVID is not the answer because we are not equipped to do COVID testing. That's when the call should be made to a physician's office or a hotline. But 911 is not the answer for, I feel bad and I think I may have COVID. Let me call somebody. And 911 is not the answer that at that instance.
You're a busy department. You get 90,000 calls, Chief Ryan, annually. I'm wondering if that's gone up because of the COVID situation.
You know, interestingly, Bill, we looked at some data and our call volume has decreased a little bit with the shelter-in-place, stay-at-home recommendations and orders. Not dramatically, but a little bit. And we compared 60 days worth of data for March and April of 2019 to March and April of 2020, and we only experienced about an 8% overall call reduction. However, it's the types of calls we're responding to that are different. So our calls for respiratory distress, trouble breathing, shortness of breath, those are up, whereas other types of incidents, vehicle accidents, things like that are down. So generally speaking, we've remained about as busy as we always are. It's just the types of incidents to which we're responding.
Are your guys and women getting tested?
So thankfully, you know, the University of Arizona just opened up the testing portal to do the antibody test for first responders. We're not mandating it at this point, but we have encouraged our folks to take advantage of the U of A testing if they want. So we do have some folks that I know have gone and done that and are on the list, the sign-up list, to go get the antibody testing. But unless we have somebody who is symptomatic, then through our occupational health provider, they can get the RNA test, the nasal swab. But in terms of just general testing, it's not a mandate at this point.
Dylan, another question for the chief.
Well, yeah, I kind of want to follow up on that. what additional steps are you taking to, you know, both have your folks be protected and protect the public? Are you using, you know, PPE when you're out on a call? What are you doing to, you know, try and not become vectors yourselves because you interact with so many people?
Right. No, thanks for asking that, Dylan. That's a great question. So we always practice strong infection control at any time, but it's even more heightened now. So things like not wearing the work shoes back into the fire station. The men and women are wearing, you know, station shoes, slides or Crocs or things like that, or sneakers, and then putting on their safety shoes when they step outside of their living quarters into the apparatus bay to get on the rigs and then respond to a call. Really strong equipment disinfection is taking place. You know, probably even a little more, it's again, sort of the good problem to help, right? It really helps us reinforce our own internal infection control policies and procedures, extra wiping down of patient compartments of our medic trucks and things like that. And as well as the respiratory protection, we wear, you know, the N95 masks, P100 filter respirators, things like that, which is part of that different look, if you will, that we talked about right at the very beginning. And then we've even gone to the point now where we're encouraging our members who want to, again, it's not a mandate, but even wearing just the cloth face covers in the stations, just to be, you know, an added layer of self-protection and protection for others.
All right. We're going to pause right here, Chief Ryan. We're going to take a break. We'll be back with you. I want to talk about your staffing situation, some of your thoughts on taking over last fall, how this department looks to you. And Dylan Smith, stick around as well telephonically as we do the Buckmaster Show. This portion of our program presented by my favorite bakery in town, Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. Everybody's very excited up at Mona's because Limited in bakery dining will be coming on board. There'll be plenty of social distancing, safe social distancing at Mona's on Monday when they get that going. But right now, they're looking forward to a big weekend as usual. A lot of folks have been buying their wonderful breads. A lot of people at home doing a lot of cooking at home, and the breads from Mona's are outstanding. They open at 6:30 in the morning, close at 2 in the afternoon. The website is monasdanishbakery.com. You can call ahead if you want, 579-1959. They'll have your order ready as you walk in. And when you do walk in, you'll notice, again, they have the safe distancing there at Mona's Danish Bakery, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. We'll take a break right here. We'll be back with Chief Ryan and Dylan Smith of TucsonSentinel.com. It's Buckmaster in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Be right back.
During the coronavirus crisis, Vero Amore restaurants in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana are still open for takeout and home delivery. You can still enjoy all your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza. They're all available for takeout and home delivery. More at veroamorepizza.com.
It's easy being green. Promote wind, install solar, drive electric cars, ban mining. Wait a minute! You can't ban mining! Green is good, but hey, no can do without the metals green products need from mining. If you ban mining, you'll ban everything green. And today's minds are on board, researching technologies that provide critical materials for a greener world. Being green, another miracle from mining. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
This is Bill Buckmaster encouraging you to fly from Tucson International Airport. When you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. A new study shows the Tucson Airport Authority's annual economic impact is $7.4 billion, with almost $1 billion of that from visitors flying into the airport. Fly Tucson, and airlines will respond with more flights, bringing more visitors, benefiting all of us. Type in TUS when you book your next flight and fly Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority and its member jurisdictions have completed more than 850 transportation projects or service improvements across the region to date. The RTA is a state-established political subdivision and taxing district. The RTA's current half-cent sales tax funds the 20-year plan through June 2026. And the RTA is laying the foundation to develop a new plan. To learn more, please visit www.rtanext.com.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, the Friday Focus interview. The new fire chief in Tucson, Chuck Ryan, is with us. Chief Ryan took over last fall, and he's got a very, he oversees a very busy department, 32nd busiest department in the country. What are your staffing? We mentioned you had about 632 uniformed and 49 non-sworn personnel on staff. Is that where we should be, Chief, for a city the size of Tucson?
So for right now, yes. But looking at the city, the growth that's both ongoing and envisioned, certainly I've made the case to my boss, the city manager, as well as our elected officials here, that the Tucson Fire Department will continue to need to grow to meet the demands of a growing city. Right now, we have an authorized headcount of 632 uniformed men and women, but candidly dealing with we're trying to play some catch-up of some vacancies that have occurred over the years. And luckily, we have a recruit class in right now of 34 eager new firefighter EMTs who graduate on June 5th, and that will go a long way to getting us closer, much closer to our allotted headcount. And we'll soon be advertising for a recruitment to run another firefighter training academy in the early part of calendar year 2021. So we're getting there. If I can fill the allotted headcount I have now, then we're good. And as the city grows and expands, we're going to need more.
All right. Dylan Smith is with us as well on the live line. And Dylan is the editor and publisher of the online news service TucsonSentinel.com. Go ahead, Dylan.
We're looking at, as a city, a pretty severe revenue shortfall this year compared to where we thought we were going to be. How are you as a department going to be able to handle that? Where can you possibly take a hit and cut some things?
You know, solid question, Dylan. Thank you. And it's not easy. No fire chief of any size department or public safety chief, for that matter, likes to talk about cuts, but it is an economic reality. And so we are a very lean organization, right? And by that, I mean we don't have a lot of excess programs or things we're running with commissioned staff, uniformed staff. The vast majority of our uniformed men and women are in the field providing service 24/7.
Aren't you a significantly tighter ship than you were, say, 20 years ago?
Yeah, when I look back, so I've been in Tucson since September 30th, 2019 was day one for me. And I look back at the history of the department, we have shrunk. The department has gotten smaller over the years, and I'm sure that had a lot to do with the economic downturn in the mid 2000s. And hopefully this won't be as significant as that. But it, to answer your question, like what are we looking at in terms of cuts?
Yeah,
we're doing, my executive staff and I are doing our very best to manage any negative impact so that there is no negative impact to services that's recognized by the residents and visitors to Tucson. And so we're going to do it through some overtime controls, taking looks where we can be even more lean, more efficient than we already are, and seek out those opportunities. And it's going to take a little bit of pain, I'm sure, to get through this, but I'm confident we'll pull through okay. And the bottom line is, at the end of the day, somebody calls us for service, they're going to get service, and they won't know what's going on behind the curtain necessarily to make sure that happens.
Chief Ryan, I want to talk a little bit about a nationally recognized model. It's the Tucson Medical Group, TMC's foundation, that you collaborate with, something called the Tucson Collaborative Community Care. Why is this program so important, Chief?
So that's another great question, and I'm so proud to be leading a department that is on the cutting edge of the broader scope of community risk reduction. And that's what Tucson Collaborative Community Care, a lot easier to say for me, is TC3, and our great partnership with TMC Foundation. Where that works and where it makes the most difference, and every fire-based EMS system in the country faces this, a challenge with what people are referred to as super utilizers, people who are making repeated heavy use of the 911 system, but for non-emergent needs. And it's typically because there's a gap, a social gap that needs to be filled, that they can't, for whatever reason, seem to get connected to the services they need. And again, that service isn't an ambulance or a fire truck or a police car or a police officer. You know, it is, they need access to, food, they need access to medicine, they need access to any host of things. It's a wide range. And so where TC3 steps in is when our crews identify these super utilizers, our client navigators working with TMC Foundation move in and make contact with the individual, and not in a shaming way, but say, hey, how can we really help you so that you're getting the help you need? And the benefit for us and for others, frankly, is that they're not calling 911 and we're not rolling a fire truck or an ambulance out the door to, you know, help somebody get a prescription refilled or because they're lonely or their dog needs food. I mean, it's a gamut. You'd be amazed and maybe not amazed at the things people call 911 for. And it's not malicious. It's they have nowhere else to go.
Sometimes they call because they can't see a doctor, right? I mean, they can't get a doctor appointment. So they want.
Exactly.
Yeah. And they want 911 to come out and be like the family physician. And that's not what your system is designed to handle.
No, it's not. It's not. We're not equipped for that. We're not physicians. We don't have physicians on our ambulances. And candidly, we're not licensed to do that. We can do an assessment within our scope of practice. And that's kind of where it ends. And we can either take them to a hospital or not. But that's typically not what they need. Like you said, they need primary care and they need access to other social services.
Dylan, as Dylan Smith and I have been reporting a lot on when it came to the police, our police department has lost a lot of people. We train them at the Tucson Police Department, and then they leave for areas, sometimes in the surrounding community, sometimes other places up in Phoenix. They make more money, then maybe they'll come back. What's our pay scale like with our firefighters?
The Tucson pay scale is a little bit on the low end. I know the city manager and city council have worked very diligently over the past year or so to raise the pay and looking at market studies to make us keep us competitive, make us more competitive with surrounding fire districts and other fire departments, municipal fire departments in the Southwest region. That takes effort and work, and it's difficult in the city environment, but it's being worked on. So we're lucky in the sense that we don't have as much of a retention problem. TPD struggles with that. I know it's a little bit easier for a police officer to take their credentials and go from one police department to another. The fire service does not work that way. Most fire departments, whether you have you have no experience or 25 years of experience, if you show up at their front door, you're going to be a rookie and you're going to start with Recruit Academy again. Huh. So it's not quite the issue for the fire service as it is for law enforcement.
All right, Dylan, another quick question before we wrap it up, please.
Just to follow on, is there any sort of demographic wave that might affect your department, you know, retirements looming on the horizon?
So we have a pretty good handle on our workforce planning with respect to anticipated departures. We don't have a lot of one-off people leaving. I mean, occasionally a spouse or family member will get a job out of the area, and that will, you know, cause one of our folks to go. But yeah. We plan for our attrition as best we can, and we're, you know, one of the things I've been tasked with is to make sure we keep that allotted headcount close to as full as possible, because that certainly results in cost savings and overtime. And so with some predictive models and some good recruiting, we can stay at least at pace with it and hopefully get ahead of it within the next calendar year.
Chief Ryan, why did you want to get into the fire service? Was this something in the family? That often is the case with firefighters?
Actually, no.
Okay.
It's interesting. I have a few members in my family who were in law enforcement, and I actually got a commission as a New York State trooper many, many years ago, and then decided to defer that, and I went to law school. But I got into the fire service mainly because I wanted to do something different, really give back to my community, and candidly, it's the best decision I've ever made, and I've never looked back. Not a moment of regret.
And with a name like Ryan, you fit right in. There are a lot of Irish Americans in the fire service.
Yeah, it seems to draw us, right?
Yes, it does. Chief Ryan, thank you very much. Coming from Virginia overall, how's the adjustment been for you, sir?
You know, it's been great. Fairfax County is a very large metropolitan jurisdiction just outside of Washington, D.C. in the National Capital Region. 1.2 million people, 400 square miles, a very big, about twice the size of Tucson's fire department. And what I really like about Tucson, A, the traffic, right? People complain about traffic here. They don't know traffic compared to the National Capital Region. But Tucson is a big city that has a real small town feel to it. And I mean that in the most positive way. Everybody here has been so welcoming and kind to both me and my wife, and I could not have made a better career move, and I couldn't be happier.
All right, Chief Ryan, I look forward to having you in better times here and seeing you face to face here in our studios. Thank you very much for spending some time with us.
Thanks, Bill. I really appreciate it. And thank you, Dylan. I appreciate the conversation and hope to meet you guys in person soon.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Take care.
Chief Ryan with us, the new fire chief of the city of Tucson. I've got lots to talk with Dylan Smith about. That will be the roundtable portion of the program as we continue telephonically for Buckmaster on a Friday on 10:30, Tucson's voice for trusted news talk in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. Be right back.
Here at Bon Voyage Travel, we encourage you to keep the travel spark alive by exploring the world through our weekly webinar series that includes inspiration and insight from some of the top leaders in the travel industry. When you're ready to plan your next adventure, know that Bon Voyage Travel will be here to advise and assist. Join us every Wednesday at 3 p.m. for a new virtual destination discovery. While we're apart, let's keep dreaming together. Visit bvtravel.com for more information.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
If it can't be grown, then it must be mined. Cause without minerals, you never find your phones, your cars, your solar panels, or your smart TVs with your favorite channels. Hospitals, schools, and public facilities result from mining's vast abilities. Dividends, taxes, and high-paid employment come from mining for your enjoyment. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, and I am Bill Buckmaster in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Dylan Smith is with us on the live line, the editor-publisher of TucsonSentinel.com. Dylan, the Arizona Department of Public Health Services, actually it's the Arizona Department of Health Services. I added public, which...
Well, they are public.
Yeah, we're public, right? Reported 67 new COVID-19 deaths today, and that has social media going absolutely crazy because yesterday there was like one COVID death reported in the state, and everybody's wondering, what the heck is going on? What is the heck going on, Dylan?
Well, before I get into that, let's go back to like the start of the week. Over the weekend, we hardly had any deaths reported. I think there was maybe one on Monday. And then, Governor Ducey came out with his announcement that we would be loosening up a lot of our restrictions on businesses and some public assembly places. And then, we had a couple of days where 30 or so deaths were reported. Then yesterday, hardly anything. Today, 67 new deaths reported today. What we need to be aware of is these are not necessarily 67 people who died in the last 24 hours. That's not how these numbers work out. At least one of these people died way back on April 12th.
Really?
As they come across new cases, as they determine that some people who have died in previous weeks did die of COVID-19, that was the, related at least to the cause of death, that they should be added to the count. We're seeing these numbers bounce around quite a bit. And sometimes, quite often they've died within the last several days. So these days where we're seeing no deaths reported or one or two deaths reported, there are very probably other people who we are losing on those days from the coronavirus. They're just not being reported immediately. So what we need to pay attention to is the general curve, the trajectory of what's going on. And that's still not great. The number of deaths is still at least somewhat plateaued, if not still going up on a percentage basis. It's definitely not going down. We don't have a significant weeks-long downward trend in the number of people in Arizona who are dying from coronavirus, at least not yet.
What about cases, Dylan?
And the number of cases is, of course, increasing. We are testing more people, so it's certainly to be expected that we are finding more people who are infected. But we're not testing anywhere near enough to really have a good idea of what's going on. Arizona is ranked 51st in testing on a per capita basis, because we're also doing worse off than Washington, D.C. We are testing fewer people from among all our residents than any place in the country, basically. So we don't have a great insight into just how widespread this is. It's still we're kind of looking at things through a very partial lens. And despite the governor's announcement that he's having a testing blitz and trying to test 20,000 people on Saturday for several Saturdays in a row, that's not going to bump up our testing percentages very much at all.
You know, when you compare Arizona to other states, and this is really, what do you look at? Do you look at per capita number of cases, per capita deaths? What jumps out at you?
Well, you have to take into account our per capita testing rate, how many people we are actually trying to test to, take our infection rate per capita like through that lens. If we're not testing enough people, we don't know how many people are infected. Certainly the per capita death rate is something that is a little bit easier to compare, but because not everyone who is dying of coronavirus is being counted, that's still very much an open question. Some states are being more proactive about determining the cause of death, especially at the very beginning of the outbreak. Arizona was not really delving deeply into a whole lot of people who were dying of, say you died at home and maybe it was the flu, maybe it was coronavirus, maybe it was this, maybe it was that. We weren't doing a really good job of investigating to see if it actually was.
Right.
And we're getting a little better about that, but there was a great piece I read earlier this week, basically talking about how comparing, at least at this moment in time, comparing our tally of COVID-19 deaths to flu deaths is just a completely false comparison, because those flu deaths that people keep talking about, that we lose, 60,000 people a year to
right.
seasonal flu, that figure is not an actual count of deaths. It's extrapolated, because most people who get the flu don't go to the hospital.
Right.
They don't get an actual determination that they have the flu.
That's true.
A whole lot of people who die of the flu end up dying at home, not yep. in a hospital. And it's only through some pretty extensive, lengthy annual statistical analysis that they come up with that 60,000 number. If you start looking at doing that in how we're looking at COVID-19 right now, the number of people who we would expect to arrive at, and it's too soon to actually start really doing this sort of analysis because we're nowhere near done with this, right?
Right.
but it would be many, many times higher than the number of reported deaths we have right now.
All right. Dylan Smith is with us, TucsonSentinel.com. TucsonSentinel.com has an interesting story about a committee that was set up to ensure employees are safe and healthy in Pima County. But guess what? 32 people are on the list, but not one representative from labor made the list. That's a little, well, I don't know, kind of surprising to say the least.
Yeah, the Pima County set up a number of committees, subcommittees, task forces to get input from people in the community about how we should go about reopening in their specific area of expertise. Like there's a committee that focuses on attractions that's broken up into subcommittees on restaurants, and they've got, you know, people who run places of assembly, like, people who put on concerts and theaters and that kind of thing. And one of these was the Business and Employee Health and Wellness Subcommittee. And their task was determining how employers can ensure that employees are safe and healthy as they return to the workplace.
Right.
Out of the 34 members of this committee, two were Pima County staff, and 32 were basically employers, big employers, or the heads of business groups. Not a single representative from any labor union or any other kind of worker group. And that got the folks at the Pima Area Labor Federation a little bit angry, I think you could say. They called it unconscionable. Yeah. And because we started asking some questions about that, the county said that they are adjusting immediately to ensure representation. We'll see whether that means just one person gets stuck on there or whether they'll get, representatives of multiple employee organizations rather than employer organizations. But at least they'll have a seat at the table. Right,
because
too.
The important
quote there, I think, is that from Trish Muir from Pima Area Labor Federation. She said that before we talk about reopening businesses in Pima County, we must first recognize that it will be the hardworking people of our community who will be doing these jobs and who will be risking their health.
Yeah, they're the frontline people. They're the people we are calling a lot of attention to, and rightly so, Dylan Smith, the people we're really honoring that are out there doing their job that are essential, and then not to have a voice on this committee. Let me ask you, Dylan, so you've got these committees, and I went through the list, and it kind of reminds me of my days at the University of Arizona, where we would sit around for so many hours in meetings.
I've listened in on they're broadcasting on Facebook Live a lot of these task force and subcommittee meetings, and I've listened in on some, and these a lot of these folks from the community are asking some pretty tough probing questions.
Good.
Of the county people.
Good.
And really trying to, I think a lot of them are very seriously concerned about how to go about this in a safe way that, protects their business, protects their staff, protects the public. I think there are some serious, well-meaning people on a lot of this. Those videos are available. Anybody can go watch them. A lot of the minutes are posted. You can skim through those and take a quick look at those questions. And I think this is a good process. I just think, quite evidently, they left some people out here and there.
Yeah, let's see if we can work Rick in. Rick called us 790-2040. Rick, you're with Bill and Dylan. Go ahead.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hi, Rick.
Just one of the things that I think, given this whole scenario, I was thinking about this last night. If you've ever been through a major hurricane, and I go back to Katrina in 05, when you look at the consequences of the immediate impact of a hurricane, and it's the residual consequences that people are struggling to deal with more and more. And I think this transition of getting people back to work has sort of a comparison as to the reality. And I was in New Orleans shortly after the hurricane, and watching people get back to work, it was a slow and arduous process.
Yeah.
But there was a conviction and a commitment to doing whatever it takes, understanding there's still going to be the problems, because just because the hurricane stopped, it's the aftermath is what really gets to people. And I think we need to be patient and more consistent with the understanding, doing what it takes to get through this, and quit finding blame and accepting responsibility.
Okay. Thank you, Rick. Rick Grinnell calling the program. Dylan, any thoughts?
I think that's a pretty good analogy, but the hurricane isn't over.
You know,
we're still seeing, a whole lot of people becoming infected, a whole lot of people dying. There is no vaccine. There's really not any effective cure or treatment if you become seriously ill from this. There are a whole lot of people who are walking around who are unknowingly, unwittingly infected and spreading it. You can go for sometimes weeks without knowing that you actually have the virus. And it's important to understand where we want to go and need to go if we can get a handle on this. I don't know if we actually have a handle on this yet.
All right, Dylan Smith, thank you very much. We'll look for your work at TucsonSentinel.com. Dylan, hope you have a great weekend.
You too, and everybody else out there. Please be well, be safe.
All right, Dylan Smith with us. Coming up next, Weekend Watch with Matt Russell on The Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. We continue on this Friday afternoon. Be right back.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
During this coronavirus crisis, Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, is still open for takeout and home delivery only. You can get all of your favorite Noble Hops menu offerings. Come pick them up, or they'll bring them to you. So check out Noble Hops on West Lambert Lane at North La Cunada Drive in Oro Valley, and online at noblehopspub.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know about my love of travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. I know you value your time and money, so it makes sense to fly Tucson with nearly 60 daily nonstop flights to major hub airports. If you're flying to another airport to take a nonstop flight, you're still making a connection and spending 4 hours on the road traveling to that other airport. That's why I fly Tucson and encourage you to do the same.
The current Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. In preparation for developing a new 20-year plan, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to identify priority projects based on public input. RTA member jurisdictions will submit their respective project lists by June 2020 for the CAC to consider for a future plan. To learn more, visit www.rtanext.com.
Let's say you need an honest roofer. Where do you start? Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona has more than 3,200 accredited businesses ready to help and committed to doing things right. Next time you need a trusted mechanic, plumber, AC company, or florist, go to our website, bbb.org, or call us at 520-888-6161. Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona. We are here to help you find local companies you can trust.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
to stir it up. I'm ready for the weekend. It's Weekend Watch with Matt Russell, Inside Tucson Business food and beverage columnist. Weekend Watch, presented by our friends over in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. They're getting very excited about folks getting that yearn to get in the car and go someplace and start traveling again. They're about a three-hour drive from Tucson. A start your planning, good place to start is southwestnewmexico.org. All sorts of outdoor recreation, plenty of room to do your social distancing. Boy, if there was ever a place like the Gila National Wilderness, you're going to have plenty of room and you won't see a lot of other people for sure. Check it out, southwestnewmexico.org. Let's welcome now the longtime host of Weekend Watch, Mr. Matt Russell. Hey, Matt, how are you?
I'm doing great. You know, it sounds like Silver City is the social distancing capital of the Southwest.
It is. So they are going to fit in very, very, very well as folks start cranking it up again and want to go. And there is certainly a lot of cabin fever out there. I'll tell you, our restaurants are really, really getting excited with their final prep before Monday.
Yeah, they certainly are. This is a big weekend, counting down the hours. We're going to see a lot of new restaurants open back up on Monday, and I, for one, could not be more excited.
Yeah, I'm very excited. But right now, we've got a huge weekend coming up with a lot of activities surrounding Mother's Day. But let's begin with an online cooking class.
Yeah, this is a really fun way to kick off the weekend, and it actually gets started in about an hour. It's the Border Community Alliance is going to be hosting an online cooking class today at 2, where you're going to learn some tips for harvesting, preparing, and cooking prickly pear cactus, as well as a little prickly pear history from the Alliance's resident succulent sophisticate. Say that three times fast. I actually harvested and cooked cactus fruits for the first time myself last summer and was really pleased to discover just how versatile this fruit is. The cooking class is about an hour. Go to the Border Community Alliance Facebook page for all the information.
What'd you do? Do that on your barbecue out back or what?
I actually roasted them on the grill and I slow smoked them to render a smoky prickly pear syrup that I used for margaritas.
Ooh. Oh, so good. What's going on at the what's going on at the bottle shop?
Yeah, you know, I've been a fan of Downtown Batch Cafe and Bar since they opened many years ago and consistently call it one of my top favorite whiskey bars. Well, their latest news is they recently opened a retail bottle shop right there on site where they stock up a huge lineup of bottled whiskeys and tequilas and other spirits for sale, some of which are really rare. And to make it easy, they showcase their current inventory on their website to kind of give you a real-time look at what they have available, and you can purchase products right online and arrange for curbside pickup. You can go check out what they have in stock right now this weekend at batchtucson.com.
A lot of our eateries really cranking it up for Mother's Day Sunday.
Absolutely, and you know, you can still dote on mom, even though you can't eat out of your favorite restaurant quite yet. And one of the ways is to build your own Mother's Day meal to go from Tucson's own Iron Chef, Wendy Gauthier, otherwise known as Chef Chic. Now, Wendy is offering 7 main courses to choose from, along with 10 options for side dishes, all kinds of desserts, and they're conveniently packaged up to go for reheating at home for families of 4 or more. Now, the hardest part is going to be to decide which option suits mom best, because my mom deserves them all. You can check out the Mom's Day menu at chefcheekaz.com.
And Inside Tucson Business column this week is?
Yeah, well, speaking of Mother's Day meals to go, I sat down recently with a local chef who shared his strategy for Mother's Day dining that requires a little thinking outside of the box. And ironically, Bill, the box became the solution, and you can read that story in this week's edition of Inside Tucson Business.
All the best to you and your mom and all the moms out there. Thank you so much, Matt Russell.
Cheers, Bill. Thanks.
All right. The Buckmaster Show is a presentation of none other than Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, which is wholly responsible for the content of our program. Want to thank some people. Our original theme music composed by a young man I met over on the island of Madeira like 4 years ago, and he composed all the original music. His name is Christophon, did a nice job for us. Thanks to Rosemary Brandt, my assistant, who's been with me a long time. Make sure all of the podcasts are up on our website in a very timely manner. My engineer, producer, friend, John Couch. Thanks, John. Another very good week that we can certainly hold our heads high as we get ready to go into the weekend. The entire team here at Bustos Media, all of us wishing you a safe, healthy, pleasant weekend.